you could have gotten a total of, you know, 4 more percentage points.
Are we talking about exam 1 or 2?
Huh?
Exam 1 or 2?
2.
Okay.
Yeah. Exam 1 and 10.
Okay.
Okay.
I can't even remember what I got on that one.
Exam 1, the questions were...
Okay.
Nothing wrong with it, basically, so... I will have those posted by this evening. Okay, both your exam 1 and exam 2. I didn't want to do 1 yet because I was, there's such a small group of you, and I wanted to see how the second exam went and all that stuff. Okay, so... What, do y'all have any questions, or have y'all even been able to look at the content?
I've looked at suicide prevention. But honestly, you do a good job with the teaching. When you're lecturing, you I'm understanding. So I don't have any questions. Just when you talk about what's gonna, like, how it's going to be on the test, that's helpful. Like where we need to focus and.
Well, okay. With suicide, you know, she went over some of the myths and facts today, but your book also covers them, so pay attention to those, because you do need to get those straight in your head, and because a lot of people, that's where they get confused and mess up because they believe a myth, okay? But one that's not in there that's a big one is that suicides happen during holiday seasons, okay? And that's really a myth. Some of them do, but generally it's afterwards. The most suicides occur in the early springtime, okay? After getting past that kind of winter point. Now those terms, instead of saying the person committed suicide now, the new terminology is that they suicided, okay? Just to get away from that stigma, the word commit, all right? Know the difference between a suicide attempt and a suicide gesture. It's real easy. Suicide gesture is also called a parasuicide. You could hear it called that. So what's a suicide attempt?
You try to kill yourself.
Okay,
you attempt it, like you take the pills, you try and shoot yourself, you try to hang yourself, but someone stops you, you get help before it happens, or it's just not successful. You took all the pills, but they didn't do anything.
You're getting there. You're almost there. What's a suicide attempt?
What's that?
What's a suicide attempt?
When you don't go for treatment, right?
What?
Isn't that like you don't end up going through with it entirely?
And unsuccessful.
Unsuccessful,
like
yeah.
You tried to kill yourself, but you didn't do it. You weren't successful at doing it.
The intent was to die.
But you weren't.
Okay? But you were not successful. That's a suicide attempt. The intent was to die. Mm-hmm. All right? I failed. I did not, you know, complete my act. They will call it a gesture because, you know, in the moment, their thought might have been to end their life, but then they come back and say, well, really, I just took those bottle of pills because I wanted to sleep. I just needed to sleep. I've been depressed and I need to sleep. So they'll call it a suicide gesture because the intent really wasn't to die, okay? Mm-hmm. It was to escape the pain at that moment. So I want you to know the big differences in those two because attempt, their true intent was to die, okay? They just didn't succeed. And now, like I said, the new terminology for when they succeed is that they suicided, okay? And then suicidal ideations, y'all
that's
know
where
that's just having
about.
Thoughts and planning your death, okay? So, if you ask somebody if they're having thoughts of killing themselves, and they say yes, The next step is what?
What? Do you have a plan?
Do you have a plan? Okay. And now, what if I say, yes, I have a plan?
Ask what the plan is?
Yeah. Okay, what is it? And then?
Get, like, convince them to get help, like.
Well, do they have the means to carry out that plan?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Because, like, if I say I'm going to shoot myself in the head, but I don't have a gun at home, and I don't own a gun, and I don't know anybody with a gun, that might be my plan, but I know it's going to be harder for me to do. Okay? So, you see what I'm saying? As opposed to somebody that has a gun at home and can go home and do it. The means is possible with that first person, but it's going to be harder to achieve than with the second person. And then the fourth thing is how, if they did it, how lethal. Okay? Somebody shooting themselves in the head with a firearm is going to be more lethal than somebody taking a dose of pills. Unless it's your TCA, antidepressants. Okay? That's pretty lethal. So those are things to keep in mind. You know, your intimate risk, it's important for your mental status examination to do that risk assessment. If they have done the act or done some form of motion, you know, you don't want to play around. You need to be calling 911 and getting them assistance. She said it's the 10th leading cause of death overall in the United States. That is correct. But it's the 4th leading cause of death in children. Okay? And it's the 2nd leading cause of death in adolescents generally. Think about your adolescents, what they go through. Going through all those changes, they suffer a lot of bullying, okay? You watched my video?
Yes.
What did you think of the little video clip on cell phones?
That, like, it hits close to home. Like, I have the 6 kids, and we don't let them have a cell phone until they're 13, which is, you know, the age that, but we don't let them, like, I crazy monitor their social media accounts and stuff like that until they're a junior in high school, if they've proven that they're trustworthy.
Mm-hmm.
So far, it's just a boring adventure into anime for all of them, which is great, but boring. But with the younger one, like, my baby has a tablet, and I know it's bad for her, but it makes her stop crying. So it's like this balance between it, and, like, I don't want to create a mentally unhealthy child, but I don't want my mental
Again, like you said, it's a balance.
Yeah, it's a balance between
but
the two.
I thought it was real interesting because wasn't just an opinion. He gave all these studies showing how technology, cell phones,
mm-hmm.
lead to more mental illnesses and suicide. And think about it. You know, I know y'all have all heard of somebody breaking up with their person over a text message.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how unpersonalized is that, okay? And that's a lot of the problem with a cell phone or a tablet, is that depersonalization, okay? So, yes, it's a great invention. We survived the coronavirus because of it, okay, being able to deliver, but it does have a lot of downfall too, okay? So, the reason I like to bring that out is just about every suicide conference I've been to lately, they talk about the reason suicide rates are so high is because of technology. That's been a big factor in the increase causing that depersonalization. Okay? Making the person feel alone.
It's not just that, though. They showed studies where you get like a dopamine release when you get likes on things. So you're taking it as almost an addiction.
That's
that
right.
You're trying to get the likes, and then you're not getting the likes. So now you're not getting that dopamine. So then you get depressed because no one's liking
exactly.
your image. And
exactly.
then you're seeing other people picture with all these friends. And you're thinking, oh, I don't have friends in my life because I don't have this picture. So then you're depressed because you don't. But like the whole story behind that picture, it's a great moment, but they have the same life you have.
That's right.
So it's a.
And I'm glad you brought that out because I was getting to that.
Oh,
that
sorry.
Was the, no, but that is the second thing behind it, you know. Everybody's life looks so much better than yours. Mm-hmm. Out in that fancy tech world, okay? So. Just keep that in mind, and that's why it's so important to have these type of workshops and stuff, to because it's so prevalent nowadays. Okay. And I'm just trying to think. You know, my study guide will help point out those things. I don't know why I can't even think what all was in that chapter. But I need you to know. I don't know if I have my PowerPoint in here. I'll be thinking this as we go along. Now, depression, your depression chapter, you know, that's why your assessment, your mental status examination for mood and affect is so important, because that mood can help you pick up on depression. And, they talk about all some different types of depression. And the main two I'm really holding y'all accountable for on the test is the major depressive disorder, okay? Because when you see somebody in the hospital for depression, that's what they got. When they're in a mental institution for depression, they have major depressive disorder. Okay, it's recurrent generally. Meaning the patient may get better for a while, but unfortunately it can't come back if they don't do what they're supposed to do. And the other one is your persistent depressive disorder, which used to be known as dysthymia. Okay. Now, what's the difference? Anybody ever watch Winnie the Pooh as a child?
Eeyore.
Okay, persistent depressive disorder is kind of like Eeyore. Okay, it's just a daily down in the dumps. Has to be present for more than 2 years, okay? It's something that's kind of there in the individual every day on a daily basis, but because of it, you know, it just makes them look at life negatively and everything. But here's one of the key factors. They're still very pretty functional individuals, okay? Whereas somebody really with major depressive disorder got to that point where they can't function. Y'all with me? Okay. So, dysthymia or persistent depressive disorder, I need to start saying that because that's the new language for it. It's very common. Generally, those folks aren't at that hopelessness point, okay? They're less suicidal. Your major depressive disorder folks are generally to that hopeless or close to it point, and they're high risk for suicide. So what's your first line of drugs for depression?
SSRIs.
SSRIs. Tell me some other classes.
SNRIs.
SNRIs. TCAs. I heard y'all say that.
MAOIs.
Okay. So your SSRIs. Give me some examples, generic wise.
Fluoxetine, paroxetine, sertraline.
Okay. What are some atypical ones I told you about that fall in that atypical category because they're in a class in and of themselves?
Like SNRIs?
What?
SNRIs or no?
No, they have their own little class because they, you know. But Bupreon, Wellbutrin, okay? And Trazodone, Desaril, okay? They're their own little entities, so I just throw them in an atypical class, okay?
But those are typical, the Trazodone is typically given for sleep, not for depression, but it's sort of a depressant.
It was created as an antidepressant, but you're right. It's used in smaller dosages now to help with sleep because it is very sedating. Mm-hmm. And that's your TCAs too, okay? You generally see them used for sleep, like amitriptyline, okay? So what's the big, who do you not give TCAs to?
People who are suicidal.
Okay, because they're very lethal. SSRIs, why are they first line?
Less side effects.
Huh?
Oh. Less side effects, less toxic than like the MAOIs.
Right. Safety, okay, less side effects. What is the biggest side effect with SSRIs?
Serotonin syndrome.
Side effect, that's an adverse effect.
Oh. Anticholinergic.
Is it the suicidal?
I was thinking increased risk of suicide, but
yeah.
Where's most of your serotonin at in your body?
What'd you say?
Where's most of your serotonin at in your body?
Oh, in your serotonin?
Stomach?
Yeah. Who said stomach?
Well, she said it first.
Yes. Yes. Okay, so that's why you often hear that somebody's starting SSRI, I'm nauseated. It's making me nauseated. Okay? So, teaching that education, eat some food with it when you take your medication. Take it at bedtime if it doesn't interfere with your sleep, you know, and as your body adjusts to it and everything, you're going to get past that point, okay? But they want to stop it immediately, but they need that education that it's generally just a transient, temporary thing. Okay, and your big side effect with TCAs and MAOIs?
Toxicity.
Side effect?
Oh, side effect, not an adverse effect.
Remember, adverse, you need to stop it, okay? Orthostatic hypotension. Okay, but what happens with the MAOIs that can become an adverse effect if they
take
the wrong drugs, yes, or
eat
the wrong foods.
So the orthostatic hypertension is common side effects for both the TCAs and the MAOIs.
It can happen with both. Okay. Okay, and what, your Bupreon, your Wellbutrin, what's a big side effect? Who do you not give those to? Somebody with what kind of history?
Seizure
disorder. Because it lowers the seizure threshold. Okay? So later on in the semester, that's where y'all will start applying this stuff. Because when we talk about substance abuse, alcohol withdrawal, somebody detoxing, that lowers the seizure threshold. A lot of alcoholics are depressed, right? So Wellbutrin's generally not a good drug to give to somebody that's trying to withdraw off alcohol. That's where you kind of start connecting all this together and why I emphasize that. Okay, ECT. Have y'all seen ECT yet?
Some of us
have. Huh?
That some have.
Not all of you yet? Mm-hmm. Okay. What'd you think about it?
Well,
what did you hear from the patients? Is it helping them?
Yeah.
Very effective treatment, okay? But it's generally not something that they jump right into, okay? Could there be exceptions to that? You betcha. Somebody that's very, very depressed and intent on killing themselves, suicidal. You know, sometimes a doctor, you'll see a doctor go, you know, straight to it almost. But generally, you don't. Now, I don't know if I've said this to y'all or not, but antidepressants are 100% effective.
40%.
Okay, y'all listening to me? But just on 40% of the problem. So the best treatment for somebody with depression is not medications alone. It's medications and therapy, because you have to address that other 60%. And if you think about it, that little rule can just about go along with any drug. Okay. But depression's a biggie, because that is the problem. You know, somebody goes into their primary care physician's office. They say they're depressed. They fill them an antidepressant. They come back 2 or 4 weeks later and they're feeling better. Good. All right. And then they come back to their next visit. Well, it's not working anymore. Okay? Because they haven't gone to address that 60% that needs addressing. But what does the PCP do? Change your medicine or up their dosage. Okay? So, what is serotonin syndrome?
It's too much serotonin.
Okay. What are some signs that the patient may be experiencing that? I'll speak up.
They uncoordinated.
Okay. Extreme nausea and vomiting. Because remember I said serotonin's in the gut. So if you got serotonin syndrome, you really got high levels. But it can be life-threatening. Y'all need to recognize that. They can start hallucinating. It can get so bad. They generally have to put these folks in the ICU. So,
what makes it life-threatening?
Huh?
What makes it life-threatening?
Because, you know, it can start affecting them neurologically. They can go into seizures.
Okay.
Their fever can spike. Yeah. They can just get very unstable. Okay. So, know that if they're on SSRI and the dosage is increased, the risk goes up. And then there's a lot of over-the-counter stuff like St. John's wort. Okay, that's going to increase their serotonin syndrome. I mean, their serotonin, and make them more at risk. Melatonin can do it to a degree, but not like the St. John's wort. And then there's other drugs. Very common one is metoclopramide, okay? Which is what?
Ragland.
So pay attention to that, you know. A lot of your patients in the hospital get that drug to help empty their gut, to speed it up. But if they're on an SSRI or some type of other antidepressant, it increases their risk. And PTSD is kind of a form of depression, in a sense, trauma disorder. Have any of y'all seen anybody with PTSD? Okay. So, acute stress disorder, or okay, generally last how long?
Less than 6 months? No, 3 months.
Less than 30 days.
30 days.
If it goes past 30 days, that's when you start saying they have PTSD. But acute stress disorder, you know, right when somebody's experienced trauma, they may not even, they may be in that defense mode and can't remember a thing that happened to them. Okay, it just seems unreal. And you know, why happened to me? I mean, they may be that bad off. Okay. PTSD, what are the main signs of PTSD?
Insomnia.
Okay.
I was thinking like reliving, like for.
Okay.
Like you might hear.
So write down intrusive thoughts. Okay. And what I mean, and intrusive thoughts, that's what interferes with that poor sleep, because they have nightmares and flashbacks. And that's what you were talking about when you said reliving. Okay. So those intrusive thoughts, the nightmares that they have at night, and the flashbacks. Okay. And what else?
Hyperarousal.
That's right.
That's aggression.
Okay. They are always like this. Just on guard, ready for something to happen. Okay. Have any of y'all seen American Sniper? I showed that clip during the lecture of where he's sitting outside and his kid is playing with the dog and the dog's just, you know, getting rough with him, but he overreacts and almost hits the dog because he sees it as a threat. And that has to do with that hyperarousal, you know, they're hypervigilant, okay? So those are the key symptoms that you'll see somebody that has PTSD. Now, what's the treatment for PTSD?
Therapy.
Cognitive behavioral therapy, changing those negative thoughts.
Stress management.
SSRIs, okay. Y'all know the name of the drug that they can give to help stop the nightmares. As a nurse practitioner, I see vets and do disability exams. I can't tell you, just about everyone that comes in is on this drug, that they've suffered some kind of PTSD. Prososin. It's an alpha adrenergic drug. It's really for blood pressure. But you will see them use it in folks with PTSD because it helps alleviate those nightmares, those intrusive thoughts during their sleep, and helps them sleep better.
What's the name of the drug again?
Prososin. And another thing that can happen to these folks, and this is kind of what the latter part of your chapter gets into, is dissociative disorders. They can dissociate, feel numb, like they can experience depersonalization. And depersonalization is actually feeling like you're not in your body, that you're outside your body. Or they can experience derealization, okay? Like, I see those chairs in the back, but they look this big to me. You know, it's just not real. It doesn't seem real, okay? So don't get those two mixed up. So that's another common symptom with PTSD. They disassociate. So that kind of moves us into the disassociative tip, disorders, that's the latter part of that chapter that has to deal, that generally arises from some type of traumatic experience. Now, there's kind of a spectrum. Dissociative disorders, they're down here on this end. Your book has this flipped. They have the dissociative amnesia first, and I don't know why. But your dissociative disorders is your most common. That's what you really need to pay attention to, because that's what you're going to see. You're going to have vets or people that suffer PTSD experiencing dissociative problems. People with personality disorders that we get into later experiencing dissociative symptoms. Okay, your schizophrenics and bipolar sometimes can do it. So that's why I want you really to get familiar with that subset, because that's what you're commonly going to see. I'll go back to that in just a minute. Dissociative amnesia in the middle is when it's exactly what it says, I can't remember. And there's different types. I have seen that, okay? But sometimes you don't know if a patient is just using that because there's a worn out form or something like that, so they're not going to tell you. But it is true thing that can happen. A lot of times it happens with those victims with acute stress disorder, okay? Because I don't want to purposely remember that event. And then down here on this end, is your dissociative identity disorder, which is not a personality disorder. So don't confuse that with a personality disorder. It's a mental disorder. It's real, but do you see it every day? No, I don't even see it every year. Okay, it's very uncommon. But all your psych thrillers in Hollywood is full of this, okay? It used to be called multiple personality disorder. And that's where the individual literally takes on a different personality and they can't remember being that person at times, okay? But I don't want you to feel like you have to get down to the overt and covert signs and that thing with this. Just recognize that it is real. It's not a personality disorder. That's very rare. This dissociative disorders of depersonalization, derealization is what I want you to really learn and get comfortable with. Okay?
Can I ask a question real quick? Because I think I'm trying to make sure I didn't confuse myself. So dissociative identity disorder is a completely separate thing from the dissociative disorder that you're taking. Like the dissociative disorder is a subset of several different things, like related to PTSD,
well,
related to schizophrenia.
Your dissociative identity disorder is a mental illness. And
okay.
Yeah, they do have personalization and depersonalization and stuff down here, but they'll totally take on a separate identity.
Okay.
But just because somebody suffers from dissociation sometimes doesn't mean they have the ID.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. Okay. So that's kind of it in a nutshell, those chapters. I feel like I'm forgetting something. I should have grabbed my stuff. I just lectured on this week. So, do you have any other questions?
With the depressive ones, do we need to know like the different, like the social response to it, the biological response? If there's something, and I haven't seen the lecture yet, but I was looking at the PowerPoint.
Well, everything you're going to apply to that
biopsychosocial
domain.
Okay.
So what's biological?
That's going to be the medication.
You can do on a depressed patient. Are they eating? Are they sleeping? Okay. What's your psychological assessment you're going to do on these folks?
What are their thought patterns?
How they feel? Suicide risks. all those things.
Okay.
And then your social part, you didn't have family support.
Yeah.
What's okay. going on at home? What, you know? So that model you're applying to all these disease processes, okay? Basically. And then what are your bio interventions for somebody with depression? Well, you may literally have to help them get up and get dressed and take a shower the first couple of days they're in the hospital because their thought processes are so cloudy, okay? They can't think straight and their energy is very low. It's not like they're wanting to be gross or not cooperate. They can't get it together to think, okay? And that's how come SSRIs have the suicide indication warning, because the initial kick with them, which is generally within a week, can improve that. They start thinking clearer, and they have a little bit more energy, but they're still depressed, right? So then they can put a plan together and carry out their plan because things have kind of cleared up. Does that make sense to you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But somebody initially in that bio domain sometimes trumps everything because they just can't get together, they can't think. And they just need some little guidance and assistance. You know, come on out here and sit with me and I'm gonna let you eat fruit while you're sitting here. Getting that going with them. Okay. Yes, you're going to see psychomotor agitation. You can see that in people with depression, but most of the time you're going to see the retardation. You know, to just leave me alone, I'm barely there. Now, the exception to that is kids. That's how you know a kid is depressed, because they start acting out. See a behavior change. They're completely different, okay? But we'll talk about that more when we talk about children and everything. But yes, behavioral changes in children, big red flag that they could be depressed and anxious, okay? What else?
Okay.
Oh, another suicide peak, she mentioned the mid guys, okay, in their mid years,
mm-hmm.
okay? That's the highest peak because midlife changes, you know, sometimes they've been employed forever and they lose their job, or marriage ends, or stuff like that.
Yeah,
but then there's also another peak at 65 years of age and up, okay, and the elderly, because of what she talked about in your little talk, okay, they start losing bodily functions, they start losing loved ones, friends, that independence, okay, and that puts them at their increased risk. Any other questions? Y'all doing okay otherwise?
I mean, the two tests a week, like this one, just like,
Well, generally the third test, and I don't want to say this, and y'all not study like you should, but I don't want to say it's easier, but there's more concrete material because you're actually studying the diseases now. You know, depression, anxiety. Well, I think I had anxiety already. But depression and personality disorders and schizophrenia and bipolar, and you're applying that stuff directly. So students historically, this is generally the test they do the best on. But y'all can knock it out of the park on all of them. All right, well, that's all I have, unless you have something you need from them.
Oh, No, just remember to turn in your paperwork. I'll be looking at that. I hope you all enjoyed the training.